Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast. I am Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello. I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Today is the first in a series of podcasts Craig and I recorded while in England. But first, let's do some Theater Folk news. Do you ever get together with other drama teachers in your district or your area, hold a mini conference, do a professional development day? Would you love to have some materials to distribute to your other teachers for your meeting? Well, we would love to send you some materials. We have catalogs, electronic catalogs on CD-ROM that have a slew of free teacher resources on them. We have sample plays we can send out, interactive educational demo DVDs. All you have to do is go to our website, click on the free stuff banner, and you'll find the contact page. Tell us when your meeting is, how many people are attending, whether it's high school, middle school, or both, and we'll send you out something lovely. Lastly, where oh where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every Wednesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on the Stitcher app, and you can subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search on the word Theater Folk. Episode 44 is a moment of brilliance worth it. So, Craig and I recently had an amazing vacation in England and a little bit of Paris. And because it's the thing we love, it's our life, our job, our everything, we took in a lot of theater. And our theatrical experiences ranged from awestruck amazing to sneaking out an intermission. And these shows resulted in a number of great conversations and a number of questions, and we just happened to, you know, record them. So, of course, one of our questions is the one for today's podcast. Does a moment of brilliance, you know, where you got the goosebumps going and you're like just awestruck, you're enthralled in a play that is for the most part pretty mediocre, is that worth it when you have one moment of brilliance and the rest really not so much? Well, let's find out.
Hello. So Craig and I are currently sitting at a lovely little kitchen table in our holiday letting in the United Kingdom in England. We are taking a vacation, isn't that right?
Yes.
Yes.
And you're happy and you're not writing.
I'm happy, I'm not writing.
I've seen you happy.
Yes.
And I've seen you writing, but I've never seen you happy and not writing.
Mm. Well, that's because in England they do tea properly. So we went to a coffee shop yesterday and I got a pot of tea. And in our little place that we have here, there is a kettle. And so you can tell in my voice, I just started smiling. But that is not what we're here to talk about. Whether or not I can be happy and not right. We're here to talk about theater. So one of the things that we're doing on our holiday is we're going to see a lot of theater. And I guess it's not a true vacation since we're actually trying to do a podcast about the shows that we go see. But we can't not talk about it, right?
No, I think you have to talk. If we see theater, we have to talk about it.
Right, because we have to make it still. That's kind of the point of theater, I think, is that it has to carry on.
And why not share what we learn while we're here?
And why not share what we learn? So our very first night, as in we got off the plane, Craig did some driving, which was,
It was harrowing, and it was more theatrically dangerous than anything you'll ever see on stage. You know about driving on the left-hand side of the road, and academically you can say in your head, well, you just kind of flip everything over, it'll probably take some adjusting, but it takes a lot. It actually, it's a real mess in your mind, just even conceiving of turning around corners. I was terrified of making that I would have to make a right-hand turn because I couldn't figure, I couldn't picture making the turn from the left lane to another left lane. It was just, it was, my brain hurt the whole time.
At this exact moment, Craig literally is reliving the moment and has his face in his hands. And then the roundabouts are a whole other story.
I think by the time we got here, I felt like I was a roundabout champion.
They warn you about the roundabouts, but they don't really warn you about the roundabouts. That was one of the last conversations I had with someone, was like, beware the roundabouts. Okay, so we drove and we went to our first stop is a grocery store. This is how we vacation. We go to local grocery stores. And then I had my pot of tea. And then we ended up we were staying in St. Leonard's by Sea, which is next door to Hastings. And in Hastings, we went to the White Rock Theater. And we saw a play called Being Tommy Cooper.
Tommy Cooper was... we didn't know of him, but he was a very well-known comedian here in England.
I think you could probably say iconic in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
60s and 70s.
There's a lot of videos on YouTube, and we'll link to some of them in the show notes.
And I think we should link to that spoon bottle thug trick.
Yes.
Yeah, so he was on TV, and he was iconic. He was known for wearing a fez. He was known for being a magician who screws everything up.
Yeah, he was a magician, and everything messed up, and the tricks kind of got exposed as he went along. So think of like a kind of blend of like a music hall performer and sort of a Penn and Teller type, where you see they expose the underlying trick behind, and it still becomes just as magical, even though that you know what's happening behind the scenes.
So the reason we want to talk about this show, the reason we went and saw the show, aside then it was theater and it was like, it was literally a 20-minute walk along the ocean. We're on the ocean. There's an ocean right outside our door right now. And it's that going to see a show that it's about a real person that we don't know, we're not familiar mm-hmm. with, we're not, and further than that, we're not familiar to the culture that he embodies, I think, a comedic type of culture that he embodies. And he died on stage. He had a heart attack on stage in the middle of a trick.
And people thought it was part of the show.
In 1984. So it's even another layer of not knowing, because there's a whole generation in Britain who don't know who he is.
Mm-hmm. We even had a chat with the lady who sold us the tickets, and she was saying that a lot of people didn't even know who he was anymore. So
and I think
we didn't feel alone.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was reflected in the audience, because it was not a full house by any way stretch of the imagination. It was we were all in the lower stalls, and that wasn't full.
No.
So we want to talk about how do you put on a play about a real person who your audience may or may not know. And I think that was the first mistake of this play, is calling it Being Tommy Cooper. I think that I think they chose that title because they thought it would be a draw, and I don't think it was a draw. It certainly wasn't a draw here.
It wasn't a draw here. Yeah, I don't think, you're right. I hadn't even thought of that, but that's probably the best point, is that it didn't need to try and tell his story, because I don't think necessarily a lot of people knew it anyway. So that the name itself wasn't necessarily a draw.
And what they're trying to sell in the play, I'll just read you exactly what it says on the leaflet. We didn't get a program because it was £3.
And we're cheapskates.
But what it says on the little leaflet is that it's in Las Vegas, 1954, which was very interesting. We had a gentleman he said it was a Boston accent.
It was like a Long Island.
Somewhere America accent. 1954, Tommy Cooper faces the prospect of his first big failure. As personal and professional problems collide, he faces stark choices about the future, packed with classic lines and hilarious routines. Being Tommy Cooper, that's also supposed to sell us, I think, is a celebration of Britain's favorite comedian. Again, how do we know? We don't know. And an exploration of his darker side. Now, that is the key term, because this fellow had a dark side, I think, that... like no other. Like, we have dark comedians. I think this guy was really, really dark.
I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think a lot of show business people, especially the really happy ones, are really dark behind.
Okay. Well, I wish there had been more dark.
I thought it was mostly dark.
Really?
Yeah.
No. Well, isn't that funny?
I felt that the only light scenes were the scenes where he was on stage. That was the only time he ever seemed happy.
Well, I guess, and here's another point. So in trying to tell this story, there was the character of Tommy Cooper, who I thought was the best of. And then there was a guy who was an American who was supposed to represent another type of failure.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need him. And then there was his agent, who was very important in the life of Tommy Cooper, but I don't know if I needed him. And then there was, he had a wife who we never saw and a girlfriend, and we saw a little bit of her.
Mm-hmm.
I wish this had been a one-man show with just Tommy Cooper showing me the light and the dark of his life, and by doing the onstage and the offstage. That's what I wish this show had been.
Mm. Or him and the agent. See, I didn't understand what there is a character who is a... the American character, I think, was probably part of a fictionalized narrative. And he was a past vaudeville performer and had amassed a collection of basically every joke ever told on vaudeville and was selling these encyclopedias of jokes to comedians. And so he was trying to sell this encyclopedia to Tommy Cooper. I think the point of it was that it was showing Tommy what his life could become when this type of comedy dies, but I didn't feel that was necessary because it didn't foreshadow anything, because that's not how his life ended and that's not how he died.
So this is a really good example of a show trying to find, because when you're telling someone's real life can be stranger than fiction, and there are some elements that are just can be so ripe for the stage, but then there's a lot of our real lives which are really kind of boring. Mm-hmm. And how do we marry that on stage, and how do we find a theatrical overlay for this? So that, I think you're right. I think that they tried this theatrical overlay of mirroring perhaps another comedian's downfall, but I don't think it worked. I don't think it was necessary.
Well, I feel the problem I think with doing biographical theater is that unless you're purposefully fictionalizing something, you're stuck to the reality of what that person's life was. And so if all we really know of Tommy Cooper is that he was a brilliant performer and much loved, but then offstage had a drinking problem and had some domestic issues, there wasn't anything particularly dramatic about that, no. Apart from telling us those two facts. And that's where I feel like you're really trapped, I think, as a writer, when you're trying to do something that's biographically based, you're more stuck to the truth of what really happened. And like you say, most of our lives are actually just quite boring. There's mundane day-to-day things that we do not... You don't see Hamlet going down to the market to pick up apples. I mean, it's not interesting.
And this is what I come across time and time again when I'm working with student writers, is that's what they want to write. Because that's their lives, right?
Yeah.
They want to write the phone conversation where we get all of the small talk with no context, nor subtext. If we go to a restaurant, they have to start with ordering. And I'm like, no, let's get to the bit. Let's get to the point, which leads us to a great disagreement that Craig and I have about this show. Which I like because in this show, which I found, 95% boring, I did. And I'm going to put some of that on some travel jet lag, and it would have been a long day, but I wasn't connecting to what the stories were telling me, except for the last scene before Act One. And in the last scene before Act One, we have Tommy Cooper come on, and he's addressed the audience before. Not that successfully.
We've
seen bits of his routines, and he comes out, and he sort of... He starts, and I know this because I've seen it on YouTube. He has a very specific routine involving a spoon in a bottle. And it's spoon, bottle, bottle, spoon. Spoon, bottle, bottle, spoon. It's about a floating spoon, and then it's revealed as a sham. And he comes out and he says, glass, bottle, bottle, glass. And he's holding an empty bottle or a half-empty bottle of whiskey and a half-empty glass. And right there, with two words, we know he has a terrible drinking problem, and we know it's bad. And then he says, I have three confessions. And we're riveted. Like, you know, I was falling asleep 2 seconds before. I'm riveted. And he comes right out and he says the words, I hit my wife. And someone in the audience visibly gasped.
Visibly
gasped. Sorry, audibly gasped. I have little goosebumps right now. Mm-hmm. It was a brilliant moment. And I wish that's where the play had started. And Craig said it would... You say it's vital.
I say that the only time that Tommy Cooper directly addressed the audience... All the other characters had monologues where they talked to the audience.
Yeah.
The only time Tommy Cooper addressed the audience was when he was doing...
His
routines. And if you notice, there were lots of times where it looked like he was going to speak to us, but he never did.
Mm-hmm.
There was an opening montage where you met various characters, and every time the lights would come on him, he was silent.
I like that.
And then the lights would go down and another little vignette would happen somewhere else. So we kept seeing these routines, and all praise to Danny Williams, who is the actor.
Damian
Williams, who played Tommy Cooper. He was brilliant. And certainly in my mind evoked everything that I remembered about the YouTube videos that we had watched last week.
I agree.
So he was brilliant. And so when he came out with that particular piece, he interrupted a pattern in our brains that we had established. He interrupted the pattern that, oh, he's going to come out, he's going to do something funny, the trick is probably going to fail, we're going to laugh, and he's going to make a lot of jokes. And so I think when he comes out with the line about hitting his wife, it hits us like a Mack truck for a lot of reasons. Not just that he hits his wife. I think if someone just walked out and said, I hit my wife, I'm not sure, unless you really knew him, you wouldn't even trust what that person was saying was true. Mm. But I think we trust that statement because it comes out of such... A place of safety for us at that point,
mm-hmm.
because we're expecting something. We're expecting something funny, and there's no way he's going to say something that's not funny. And you, for a half a second, you think, how is this going to turn into a punchline? And it doesn't. And it's the only time he actually really addresses us, the audience. And we really do get that glimpse of what it is to be Tommy Cooper.
And I wish and then we were so excited because it was like, oh, and then what's going to happen in the second act? Mm-hmm. And then nothing happened in the second act.
Not really, no.
Oh, so, and then our next question was, if you get a moment of brilliance in a play, is that play worth it?
Well, I felt it was. I just wish I knew that the second act wasn't necessary, so I didn't have to stay. But I was compelled to go back after the intermission.
Yeah.
And we're not shy about leaving shows at intermission.
No, we're not shy. At all. Yeah, I think you're right. I'm still thinking about that moment.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that the play at some level is successful because it made me still remember something about it. It left an impression
mm-hmm.
on me, you know, 24, not 24 hours, but 12 hours later.
Mm-hmm. So I think the problem dramatically was that, I don't know too much about his life, but I do know that he was successful and much beloved and died on stage performing in front of millions of people. It was live on television.
Yeah.
And so that's really hard to dramatize because there isn't too much conflict. Apart from to say that he drank and he had a mistress, but he still died on top.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why they set the play in his Las moment of Vegas.
Failure, cause this because was a moment of failure.
It was
for
him. Yeah, it was a failed venture. They were bringing. I guess Vera Lynn was on this same bill with him in this Vegas show, and I guess Americans hated Vera Lynn. They found her really boring. But he was a success, and he was going on to Broadway or something. So maybe the wife stayed with him in real life too, because I felt like that was the only thing that could have, the wife could have shown up or something. And that could have been that could have been some conflict, but I didn't feel there was any conflict. I mean,
no, a lot of talking.
But what I read on Wikipedia too, is there were promoters who were upset because he would show up drunk and not do his whole show. See, they didn't really go into the actual repercussions of his alcoholism.
No, there, that's what I said. There wasn't enough dark because it was, you know what, it was that we sort of circled the same, dark.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't see where, because dark has tentacles, right? Mm-hmm. And dark goes out into everything. And because the wife wasn't there, we didn't see anything in that regard. And we spiraled, we didn't, and we circled, we didn't, it didn't, ooze and seep into everything. And I think that they thought it did, because I think the way particularly that the agent acted, mm-hmm. he was acting in a response to a behavior that we weren't fully seeing, mm-hmm. I think. Anyway, so...
The other thing I would say, too, is that Cooper's trademark was this red fez. Well, I guess all fezes are red. He would wear a fez on stage. And that was his iconic mm-hmm. look. You'll never see a picture of him without that fez on. And when they were setting up the play, we were meeting the encyclopedia salesman, we were meeting the agent, we were meeting Tommy Cooper. There was a moment where Cooper was sitting on a bed in his hotel room in Las Vegas, and he was fiddling with stuff and unpacking, and at one moment he pulled his fez out of his suitcase. But that was actually in half light when another character was speaking, and I felt that is his persona, and his character is wrapped up into this fez, right? Like, you see this guy just sitting, a normal guy sitting on a bed, when he has the fez on, he's Tommy Cooper on stage. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that moment should have been highlighted, because that's the moment where he becomes Tommy Cooper. And I'll say one more thing before we
go.
The other moment I had when I watched the show had nothing to do with the show at all. There was a moment just as the show began. Actually, we just sat down and I saw somebody walk on stage and put something on stage, and I turned to Lindsay and I said, "That better be a cast member," because I thought, "Oh, this is lousy. This is lousy theater if some stagehand has to put something on stage like 2 seconds before the show starts." And it turned out, actually, it was a character, and the play just kind of eased right in. It started quite nicely.
And then you turned to me and said...
Well, and then I had this little moment where I thought, wow, this is the first time I'm seeing a play on the actual land where the English theater
began.
And it was really, really cool. It was magical.
Yeah, it really, really hit you. And and then later on, we're going to actually see, which is the quintessential British experience. We're going to see Hamlet at the RSC, and I'm a little giddy about that too.
Okay.
I think we like theater, Craig.
Yeah.
I think that's why we get pissed off when theater goes awry, because I think we know its importance. It's important and it's powerful. And when people fluff it off, or when people, actors and performances, productions, treat it
frivolously
or callously or jadedly, that hurts our little souls.
So yes, that moment was worth it.
Yeah.
To summarize.
Yes. And Craig turned to me and said, "I love the theater." Because it really was a magical moment. We just sort of eased into a play.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you.